Hello, and welcome to Connecting
with Mike and Adrian. We will explore stories and personal experiences that have strengthened our connections
in hopes that they strengthen yours.
Hello, and welcome to Connecting with Mike and Adrian. We're your hosts, Adrian Olson
and Mike Olson. And this is an episode we've had written down for quite a while, and it's just like, what are we going to do that? And this is something that always excites me. You know, we've talked about curiosity before, but I am just like really curious about nature and the world around me. And I know you are too, Adrian. You know, I think back to when I was a kid watching the black and white TV with my parents every night, the shows that would come on, you know, about nature and science and those kind of things. And, you know, the moon launch and landing and all that kind of stuff. And you know, some of the shows that I remember would be like Jacques Cousteau. He would be doing all the scuba things and doing the deep sea dives and seeing all those sea creatures. Did you watch any of those?
Oh, yeah. Jacques Cousteau, for sure. And I remember just being so intrigued because it was all brand new information. I had never swam in an ocean or, you know, or even thought about what was underneath that water. And so a whole new world, literally.
Right. And he invented the scuba gear to begin with. So it was just a huge thing. And it was exciting to see what would happen, you know, and then it made me think of, you know, the book 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and all that kind of fiction and seeing that brought to life. And then we always used to watch Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. I don't know if you saw that.
I used to watch that with my family, right? For sure.
We always got a laugh out of that because it would be Richard Perkins and Jim Fowler. And it was always one of them, and it was Richard would say, and now we see Jim sticking his head in the mouth of a lion. I mean, Jim was always doing something that seemed somewhat dangerous out there in the African outback or somewhere.
Today, right? Those episodes would be complete memes, right?
In our world.
Yeah. But back when we were kids, it was fascinating because it was an introduction to new things.
Right, because if you wanted to learn something about the world, you went and grabbed the encyclopedia. You couldn't Google it, right? There was no quick access to this information. You went to the library, you checked out a book at school, and you dug in. And the encyclopedias were large. I mean, there's many, many volumes. I remember we even bought an encyclopedia set for our kids when they were young because it was just a ton of information about the world. And it was so exciting to read them and to look at them and to explore, right? Mm-hmm. But now things are a bit easier with the internet and also, you know, TV and being able to stream whatever you want to stream, right? I spend a lot of time at lunch during the workday watching all these shows I love on the History Channel and National Geographic.
Discover.
And travel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just so much out there that you could see. You know, one of the favorites that I'm watching now is Mysteries at the Museum with Don Wildman. And we all kind of get into that. And it's fun because it's a low-commitment kind of show. You're not stuck into a history program for hours on end in a, you know, 10, 15-minute snippet. You know, they go into some museum somewhere in the U.S. or the world, and they, like, slowly hone into some artifact. And then they tell you some kind of thing about it. It happens to measure 6 inches wide and 10 inches tall, and it's got engravings.
So you're kind of guessing and playing along as the show develops?
Exactly. And they're doing that, like, you know, that's the intro to each segment. And they're showing it on camera, and you kind of, sometimes you can figure out what it is they're showing you. Other times you're like, what is that from? And then they give you the backstory. So then you find out where that thing came from, what the story is behind it, who are the people involved, was it an invention, was it a historical event, you know, was it maybe it was a robbery or a murder, or maybe it had to do with the war, or maybe it had to do with outer space. Who knows what it is? And so I just find that really intriguing to learn about history, to learn about these different artifacts that are out there, because I know we're not going to get to every museum that's out there, but we always have a great time when we go and to learn about these different things and read all the little placards that they've got up. So it's just kind of a fun show to watch. So that's Mysteries at the Museum.
I think it's also really cool to see artifacts that we don't use in current day because we've developed some sort of other technology. Right? So it's interesting to see in our place and time, like, oh, this is what they did before
Yes.
We had this. I find that very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. What is this tool used for? That's a great point. Sometimes on my Facebook feed, though, I don't know, because I probably looked at something, right? They track all that stuff. And then so a unique tool will present itself out of the 1800s or 1700s. Somebody posts this picture on Facebook. And what is this? Mm-hmm. Do you know what it is? You know, don't give it away. But do you know what this thing is? And sometimes I do and other times I don't. But I certainly look into it because it's exactly that. It's intriguing, right? I mean, we know so much and yet we know so little about what's happened and what's transpired. You know, one of the shows that I really enjoy is Expedition Unknown with Josh Gates. We've watched that as a family, and it many, many years of episodes where Josh is traveling around the world, sometimes in peril, where he goes and with mishaps, but very much almost Indiana Jones-like in creating these adventures and looking at things and going to Egypt and other places. And you go, how did they build that, right? What technology did they use? And people still argue today over how the pyramids were made. You know, did they use logs? Obviously, it was slave labor and there was rolling. But how did it all happen? How did they move these huge stones from the quarry to where it is? I mean, it's just kind of mind-blowing. What were those tools that they used? And so those shows, I think, are just kind of fun to think. And we go, you know, it's amazing how little we know about our own history because a lot of it wasn't recorded, right? We had oral tradition and things were not written down, not very well.
Well, and we're trying to reverse engineer how did Stonehenge get put together and what was right. its use? And we're all doing it.
Yeah, all those purposes,
hindsight.
Right? Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, all those kind of things. And, you know, I remember looking at, you know, like some of the shows were like the Nazca Lines in Peru, where if you look from above through an airplane or if you happen to have a drone, you can see these huge carvings essentially in the countryside that the peoples used. And they've been there for well over 2,000 years, 2,500 years that were built into the countryside, and they're huge. So,
but how could they see that? Because they never were able then, they didn't have the technology to see an aerial
right.
or bird's eye view at all.
Right. So they had to somehow keep track of these things, like they would do like insects and animals and things like that. So these drawings then on the ground, which look phenomenal from the area, how did they keep track of where they were to create these images?
What were they
images?
Used for? Why did they create yeah. them?
Some of the theories are they think it was used for religious reasons.
Oh, okay.
So for some of the rituals and things like that. And but nobody knows for sure, but that's probably a good guess. But how did they create that with such accuracy and beauty, you know, 2,500 years ago? I mean, somebody out there with a surveyor's pole and rod and going, okay, you know, there's no walkie-talkie to go, hey, go to the left a little bit, right? So how did they do that and make them look cool? So that's something to look up. If you've not seen the Nazca Lines, Google that. It's quite amazing things that they did, you know, 2,500 years ago. So really enjoy Expedition Unknown. There's always unknown. There's always something exciting that Josh and the team are doing and looking at and digging into the history. And so that's always fun. And then beyond that, a spinoff is Expedition X. That's something we've been getting into. So that more borders on the paranormal kind of stuff, things that are just out there a little bit on the fringe. And he brings in Jessica and Phil, and he sends them out on these missions. And they go investigate a little bit deeper all these kind of strange things with all types of equipment. So that's fun. And then lately, beginning into Skinwalker Ranch. I've always been into UFOs and that kind of stuff. So I just find that interesting and intriguing, you know, looking up at the night sky and going, that's not a satellite. Airplanes don't move like that. What is that? What's going on out there? What is the big picture, right?
I think the cool thing with that show is just how much they're trying to explore and validate and figure out using scientific,
right?
A really, really forward technology.
Yeah.
In figuring out things that we don't know. Things that I would say are inexplicable.
Right.
Right? Things we are still, even though we've come so far,
mm-hmm.
things we are still wondering about and trying to make sense of in our minds. I think peculiar things make us wonder.
Yeah, they do. And then they connect us to other things, right? So like, you know, as I watch these shows and you know, I try to put things together and go, oh, they were doing this on this part of the world, and yet on this other side of the world, they're doing something similar, and they clearly had no communication, right?
So I definitely think this speaks to your love of pattern.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I think you're attracted to these shows or these concepts because people are finding similar things in different places in the world, and you're like, well, why is that occurring?
Yeah. And I do love that. And how did we get there? And I think it's amazing that, you know, you can have, we have similar ideas, like the consciousness, like if you look at history and through inventions, like a lot of people were working on the same thing at the same time, right? And I don't
probably
think it was all copying.
Because there was a need.
But the need, exactly.
Right? To fulfill a need. Yep. And so they were coming up with answers.
Right. Or trying to find that solution. And I like your point about the scientific part of it. You know, this stuff is all intriguing and interesting, and that's cool in itself and the wonderment of it. But to be able to put science behind it, to try to understand, to, you know, make sure things aren't hoax and bogus things out there, you know, things are real. Let's look at the real science. And, you know, Expedition X tries hard on doing that. Skinwalker Ranch is doing that. So I think that's really important to keep science in there and be looking at these things and let's be learning from it and figure it out, because there's so much that we don't know. There's just like a world.
Well, all those new
know.
Technologies add a new piece to the puzzle that we didn't have previously when we were just extrapolating or guessing.
Right.
Right. And it allows us to test our hypothesis. I mean, scientific method.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think also one of the things about peculiar or strange happenings or occurrences or things that you notice. And this is funny. When our kids were really little, they would say, oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
And then we would try to, not that weird is a bad word, but I felt like it had a little bit of a negative connotation. So we'd try to say, well, can we say that that is unique or different?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And with these peculiar things happening and the things that you love to notice or watch shows about, can we call them unique or different because they're of value to someone else, even if we find them strange or peculiar or weird? One thing when we were considering this as a topic, and I love when I'm out socially with other people, and then we're talking about some topic and someone goes, hey, fun fact.
Right.
I love that.
Yeah, and ears perk up right away, right?
Well, yeah, I'm kind of in tune to hearing about the fun fact that relates to the topic that we're talking about. And so we thought it'd be fun just to look up some fun facts.
Sure.
And we're a big Lego family. Love Legos. And so here's my first fun fact. There are more Lego minifigs, than there are people on Earth. There's more Lego minis.
That is amazing. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, they're much smaller than real people. And probably anyone that has even just one Lego set in their home,
they got a lot of minifigs.
Has some minifigs. So if you have more sets and think of all the stores and the boxes and the factories cranking out Legos and the new Lego show. Like,
that's a lot of minifigs.
But more than there are people on the Earth. Here's
good,
another
good
fun
thing
fact.
They don't take up a lot of space.
Right? Not life size.
Right.
Just at the store. Here's one. You can't hum while pinching your nose.
Okay. I've never heard of that before.
Well, me either, but fun.
Fun. Should we try it?
You try okay, it. Right. You try
okay.
it.
All right, here we go. I'm going to pinch my nose. Ready, set.
I see the problem.
Yeah. Oxygen, not there.
Right. So when you do hum, you must be just breathing through
your nose.
Just breathing through your nose.
Right.
So you can't create the sound and breathe.
Don't try this in driving.
Yeah, please. Don't try that one. Here's one that I can see in real life and have thought about. This one is, in a group of 23 people, there's a 50% chance that two of those people will share a birthday.
That's pretty high.
I noticed this when I was teaching, that birthdays kind of group up for summer. I have no idea where, you know, how this fun fact actually, how the statistics work or how the math actually works. But you share a birthday with someone in our family.
Yep.
And that has happened, you know, multiple times. Of all the days in 365 days for one family to have a couple people that share the same actual birthday and rather than having their own date is very unique.
That is, yeah.
Yeah. So that one's fun. Maybe next party, if there's approximately 23 people, see if people share birthdays.
Right. Let's run around and do a quick survey.
Yeah. Here's a good one for all the foodies out there. Canada, as a country, eats more mac and cheese than any other nation on the planet.
Who knew?
Who knew those Canadians love their mac cheese?
I love a good mac cheese.
Maybe next week our social media will be share a fun fact.
Hey, there you go.
That's a good idea. Think about it.
There are some peculiar things that I've noticed that have caught my attention over the years. You know, I've always been fascinated by electricity and electronics and, you know, that kind of stuff. Taught myself electronics. And so I've always been digging into stuff. And one of the simple – and I'm always amazed by the simple things. And one of the simple things that has amazed me are magnets. I mean, I've played with magnets like forever when I was a kid, you know, in the North and the South Pole and making them attract and, you know, making the same poles, you know, push apart.
Repel.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, repel. And even using them in some of the gaming tables I've made, using rare earth magnets to act, that are super, super strong to hold like cup holders into the side of a game table. You know, magnets are just amazing little things. I'm making electromagnets when I was, you know, doing a lot of electronics. Doing that kind of thing. But it's just when I look at magnets, I go, huh, they're kind of crazy cool. Cause you know, we're standing on this planet Earth, which is spinning, and we're held to it because of that spin, the gravitational pull keeping us there. And yet I can take a piece of paper, 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And if I let go, it's gonna fall, right?
Gravity will win.
Gravity's going to win. But I can take the smallest of magnets and take that piece of paper and stick it on the refrigerator with that magnet, gravity loses every time.
Mm.
And it's just, I think it's amazing to see that comparison. That always surprised me when I was a kid. I was like, you know, I can jump up in the air and I'm coming back down.
Right. Right? 100% of the time.
Every time, right? Yeah, you can't lose that bet. That piece of paper, it's going to stick to that refrigerator every time. You know, you
because
go
of a magnet.
Because of a little magnet, right?
Right. They don't have to be that big.
No. You go outside with a compass and you know, you're looking at the magnetic north with that, you know, which can get messed up. You get near middle objects, but still that magnetism, I think, is one of those things that is really peculiar. Gravity, you know, that's pretty obvious. We're spinning. They got that hammered down. But there's a lot about magnetism I think we're still learning. But
right. It's still unknown. And peculiar and strange to us.
Yeah, I really think it is. So that's always been something. Another thing I noticed, and this is before I used to walk around with a camera all the time or had a cell phone. I remember being on a hike one time, and I don't remember where it was because I've been on so many hikes, but deep in the woods, and, you know, in the middle of the woods were these big, like, rock outcroppings, like, you know, taller than a house, right? Two mm-hmm. stories tall, you know, or so. And, you know, boulder.
Like on a bluff?
Yeah, kind of like a bluff. Yeah, okay. You know, like kind of like a bluff, but not as tall as a big bluff, but huge and boulderous, I would say. So not, you know, sharp cliff cut off, more like huge rocks built, stacked up, you know, kind of thing. And I remember walking by on this trail and seeing this huge rock mass thing, and for the lack of the correct scientific term, and on the edge of this was like a large boulder, like rounded shape boulder, right, coming up. And below it, directly below it, on the ground, a tree had grown up, right? So a seedling had dropped, deposited by some animal or whatever, right? And so the tree, of course, grows up, right? And what does it do? It doesn't run into the rock. It actually curved around that rock outcropping and then went straight up again. So, and it left an air gap, like 6 to 10 inches or something. So it's like it knew it was there.
So it didn't hit the rock.
Didn't hit the rock.
And then turn.
No, there was clear space between the rock and the tree. I wish I would have had a picture of that, because it was just, I was just like, what? You know, what is it about that we don't understand, right? How did this plant, this tree, understand that there was something in its path?
Did they communicate with one another?
Right. Is it the light? You know, what was it? How did it know? How did it sense that?
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I was just like, huh, peculiar. It's just something that, one of those things I tuck in the back of my head and go, I don't understand it. There's probably a scientific reason, I'm sure. But wow, that is just crazy, right? And they go, wow.
And sometimes, what are the odds? Like, what are the chances that that is what would really happen?
Right. Yeah.
It's so interesting.
I find it really phenomenal. So, yeah. Another thing I've noticed, and this one I do have an explanation for, but I've always noticed that in the wintertime, we're in Minnesota, if you look at the base of a tree, there's typically no or little snow around it. And I always thought that was peculiar too, because I'm like, okay, is it the wind that's whipping around it? Because you'll get some of that effect, of course, due to drifting, due to the direction of the prevailing winds coming by. And you'll see that. That's pretty obvious because the way it gets cupped out. But yet there's a section of grass or earth or whatever that eventually shows itself. And yet the snow can be quite deep, and you'll see this. And I just always thought that was peculiar. So I looked it up. I'm like, there's got to be a reason for this. It's got to make sense. Because,
as they say, inquiring minds want to know, right? Right? That's where that saying came from.
Exactly.
Like, I really want to know if there's a reason.
Yeah. And so I did. So I looked it up. I'm like, it's not the wind. It's something else. It's solar radiation. So the tree is absorbing the sunlight.
Mm-hmm. Even in winter.
Even in winter.
Our cold winters.
Yep, even in our cold winters. And it is reflecting that heat. And so the snow is actually melting around it.
We can see it very clearly in our backyard.
In our backyard, yep.
Our backyard has a little space of grass, and then we've got some mix of trees back there. And always, always, a day or two after the snowstorm, you can kind of see the snow melting from around all the trees and just evaporating and
And sublimating is the term when the snow turns then into then vapor form is what's going on. Yeah.
And also we can see it from the back of the woods coming forward in the springtime as it kind of melts.
Right. As it recedes.
Like a ebb and flow. Yeah. Which is kind of interesting.
And the forest is always the first to lose its snow. The grassy areas will
hang on to it. Right, our yard is still
hangs on to
feet
it.
Of snow sometimes.
Right. Exactly, yeah. And the forest will actually empty out. Yeah. So that's another thing I've noticed about trees. And then we get to this next one. And this one was really, I think, what kicked off this episode. This is one of the things that you know, it's not anything I noticed, but it's something that I learned probably in junior high. And it has to do with numbers. We have a magic number. And some of you may know it, some of you may not. It's called magic number 9. And the first time I heard this, I was just like, whoa, that is cool. And how it works, and this is the only number that does it in the numbers that we use. Now, I'll get into it more, but we use, as a number system, base 10. Okay, so I'll talk more about that in a minute. But it's the only number in our system, base 10, that does this. And this is why 9 is so magical. It blew my mind. Well, let's take the number 9 and let's multiply it times any number. So let's take a simple number. Let's say 3. Okay, so 9 times 3, 27. Okay, so anytime you're going to multiply with 9, you're going to add those numbers together. So the answer. Yep. So 3 times 9, 9 times 3, 27. Add 2 and 7. What do you get? 9.
Back to 9.
You can do that with any whole number you want and multiply it times 9. Take the product and add up all those numbers. Keep reducing it down to a single digit. And you're going to get 9 every single time.
Yeah. There's something cosmic about that.
Yeah, I think so. I was like, what?
And maybe it isn't the exact thing we call 9, but it's like the place in the order in the universe.
It is. You're exactly right. It is its place. It is, because as you look at the number system, it is the maximum number because it starts over again. So, right. So we've got base 10 would be 0 through 9. After 9 comes 10. It is the end of the line and the start of the new. And so that position. So there's a lot of different names for numbers, right? We've got a lot of languages. We happen to call it 9 in English. So another language calls it something else. But it's that same position in the
of
base
numbers.
Of the numbers in that base 10 math.
Right.
So whatever you want to call it in that position has this quality. But it doesn't stop there. No, no, there's more. So you can multiply and come up with that. You can also add. All right. So let's add some numbers to that. And so let's now, instead of doing 3 times 9, let's do 3 plus 9. So 3 plus 9 is?
12.
12. Add those two numbers together. What do you get? 3. You get back now to the number you added to it. So in the first case with multiplication, you end up with 9.
Right.
But additively, you end up with a number you started with.
The original number.
If you were to add it together. Which I just find that, again, like you said, kind of cosmic. Because like, so multiplying, you get to the 9. But adding, you get to the additive number. And I just find that kind of like, huh, that's like looking at things in two different perspectives, like vertically and horizontally. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It just seems kind of communal to me. And let's do it a little more difficult. Let's take a harder number. Let's take 123 now times 9.
Okay. All right.
So big number now. That comes up to 1,107, 1107. Add that together. 1 plus 1 is 2 plus 7 is 9, right? So here we are again. All right, now let's do the same thing. 123 plus 9 equals 132. Let's add those numbers together. 1 plus 3 is 4 plus 2 is 6. And if you add 123, the number we started with, 1 plus 2 is 3, 3 plus 3 is 6. Again, we're back to that original number. So whether you multiply, whether you add, or hey, even if you divide.
Really?
Yeah, even if you divide, there's some crazy stuff going on with magic number 9. So if we take 123, divide by 9, the decimal number is where the magic occurs. We end up with a repeating decimal number. And guess what number it is? 1 plus 2 plus 3 is 6. That happens to be the repeating decimal number. Will be whatever you divide into then, in this case, will be 13.66666666666666.
Oh, that'll be the
repeating number.
Okay.
Yep. So you add those numbers together, and that is going to be your decimal repeating.
What's so fascinating about that is that there isn't an exception to the rule. You know, like with language, sometimes we'll say, oh, I before E except after C, and then it doesn't work for some other words. And so we're just
right.
creating rules or trying to create a placeholder or something like that.
Yeah.
And but with the number 9, there it works with every number.
Every number. That, every whole right, number.
Without exception.
Yeah, every whole number without exception, this is going to occur. And go ahead, try it for yourself. It's kind of amazing, kind of fun. And try it with your coworkers, your friends.
I didn't know a lot of the additional information. I figured out at a very young age. And also then when I taught third grade.
Mm-hmm.
In third grade, we teach, well, it might change now, but back when I taught third grade, we taught multiplying. And so by the time we got to the nines times table, then
yeah.
after they would memorize them, then we would get out our hands and take a look at it.
Right.
Right. And right. so same thing like what you were saying, 9 times whatever number, if you read left to right, like we do in English.
Yep. Adrian's got her hands up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you're going to put your yep. pinky finger down on your left hand and you have 9 digits left.
Yep.
So that was 9 times 1. And then you put down your second finger, 9 times 2. You have one finger to the left of the finger you have down.
Okay.
And you have eight up.
Right.
Right. And you could do that all the way. 9 times 3 is 27.
Seven.
Yep. 9 times 6, 54.
Oh, I don't think I've ever seen that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah.
I'm learning something.
Yeah.
That's clever.
Yeah. So it works even with that representation mm-hmm. of your hands or your fingers.
Right.
You don't really want to teach your kids how to do that, or they'll never get the mental math of
the nine times table.
But it is kind of cool that it does work without exception.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. And then, of course, it works with more things than that. So, of course, we've got the degrees in a circle, right? There's 360
Oh, now we're moving
degrees.
Into geometry.
Right. And so this goes way back. So it all has to do with the base number that is being used, and it just happens to work out with 9 as well, with the angles as well. So, but the crux of it is it happens to be the position. So it's not really the number 9. It's like you said, it's where it ends up with in this number counting base that we're using. We happen to be base 10. If you were using some other base, you could then also find that same magic position. It would end up there as well. So if you're using hexadecimal or if you're using base 7, the magic position would be actually position 6. So it's one less than whatever the base is. So if it's base 10, you subtract 1. Now it's the number 9. So there's different counting and math schemes out there. We use base 10 pretty much. So it happens to be that 9th position. And I just think that's really amazing. Just that it does that. I don't know. It makes my head go, wow, that is just
cool.
Kind of cool. Yeah. And, you know, and then further I go, okay, I get the math part of it, but why? Why? What is it about that position that does this? And is it because it is the completeness position of that number sequence, right? I mean, it you can't be more complete than 9. You then start over again to the next thing. So the highest number you can count to is 9, but not really, right? I mean, because it goes for infinity, but in base 10, then you start over again. So I just find that really, really peculiar.
When we were first chatting about this topic, about things that are strange or peculiar or different or unique, it made me think back to the first time I kind of really thought about the concept.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, we watched a lot of movies as a family.
Yeah.
And I remember watching Mary Poppins.
Oh, I love that show.
Yeah. And big fan of musicals.
Yeah.
And I remember the movie and the flow of the storyline. And then I remember it changing a little.
Mm-hmm.
When you come to the scene where the woman is in front of the bank and she's feeding the birds.
Right.
I feel like it's a very subtle shift, but it is, the mood changes, the lighting changes, mm-hmm. the song is not upbeat, the song is slower, and
right.
it's got a different tone to it. And I just remember thinking, well, that's odd.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Or which would be a synonym for peculiar.
Right.
Right? Like, oh, we've got this whole upbeat thing. Like, what is the message here?
Yeah, there's something happening here, right?
With this lady who is feeding and taking her last tuppence, her last monies to buy food for the birds instead of possibly herself or her family. You don't know.
Right. We don't know the backstory.
Rest. Right. You don't know the backstory. And I remember the children being concerned and wondering about her. I remember them also sort of being fearful of what I would say is something new or something unknown.
Right.
But really, it just struck me that whole scene and that person was unlike the rest of the movie.
Yeah, and they were very curious about her and what she was doing. And their father, Mr. Banks, was like, oh, no, you know. Right? Shine them away from her.
Which causes us to fear the unknown
right.
or something peculiar or mm-hmm. odd. So I just remember thinking that it's interesting that sometimes we have that perception of things that are peculiar. Sometimes we're interested and intrigued right. by them, and other times they bring up fear or questioning in us.
Yeah, yeah, they do. And I think it's good to pay attention. Sometimes it's warranted, other times not.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe the message is more that we're all odd in our own unique, special ways. Mm-hmm. We're all peculiar. No one is exactly like anyone else. Not even, they say, twins or triplets.
Right.
You know, everyone is unique and special.
Yeah. There's no replica complete anywhere, ever. Yeah. We are all unique. We all have different gifts. We all have different talents. We all have different things that we bring to this planet Earth that we can do. The way we think, the way we feel, all of it.
So the next time we encounter something peculiar or odd, or if we think that of ourselves, possibly we could change that lens and think about how special and unique and what is the cosmic reason for that to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
What is the cosmic reason? What am I here to do that no one else can do?
Right. What is that special thing?
Like the special magic number 9. What's magic about you? What's magic about your family members, your coworkers, your neighbors? And now it's time for Word of the Day with Mike.
Okay, today's word is prodigious. I can't think of a time that I've used that word. I heard the word, read the word.
I was like, how did you come up with it then if you've never heard of it?
Yeah, just going through this thesaurus, and I was like, huh, I should use that word more. I really like the ring of that word, prodigious. I don't know why. It's just there. So let's take a look at it. What does this word mean from the Webster's 1913 edition? Of the nature of prodigy, marvelous, wonderful, portentous. Definition number 2, extraordinary in bulk, extent, quantity, or degree, very great, vast, huge, immense. Prodigious. As we look at life and identify perhaps peculiar things like we see, I think those things can be marvelous and wonderful and just exciting and drive that curiosity. And I think that's why I picked this word, is because that's the kind of feeling that I get when I see those things or discover those things. I have that prodigious feeling within.
Thanks for joining us today. We hope that this episode encourages you to explore ways to deepen and strengthen your relationships. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or listen to us on our website, connectingwithma.com. Remember to hit the like button and tell a friend.